Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. I have a very, very special guest, and I think a lot of folks in the CX world are going to know who I've got on the show today. Alex Mead is Executive Director of Customer Service Experience. Now, we can't tell you the name of the company. Super secret stuff. If you're in the U.S., it's CIA, FBI level. If you're in London, maybe it's MI5, MI6 level. I don't know how many levels that goes up, but anyway, it could be MI7 or MI8. But Alex and I have a mutual passion in that we don't appreciate all of this sort of theoretical stuff out there on the blogosphere about customer experience. But we're going to get a little deeper into his approach, what he's been doing, what he's up to. Alex, thanks so much for coming to the show. I'm really excited to have you on.
You're welcome. And I like pretty much everything you write as well. So it's good to be
here. Oh, cheers. Thanks so much.
I'd like to debate with you, but we have a mutual respect. Let's hope we can get back by the end of this.
We're going to have a fun time today. So what I ask every guest, Alex, just, you know, tell us about your journey, maybe some of the differentiating factors that helped you achieve your role where you are today, because you're in the Middle East, you're a startup, it's a bank, a lot of funding behind it. Obviously, again, we can't name the company, that'll be coming out soon. But how did you get that customer bug? Like, where did that start?
Well, it all started with an accreditation joke. Sorry, no, it did not. So I started, I studied university at Southampton, and when it was May, when my kids would say, when dinosaurs walked the earth, that sort of time period, I had a degree in IT, and I had an offer to be a graduate in a big IT company. But I went to a thing called Spring Break in Fort Lauderdale, May, many years ago, and I'm English, and damn, I was attractive then. In my mind, anyway.
To other people, I can see it. You still are, man. We're on video. People will see this.
I wish. Oh, my God. Yeah. So, I had an amazing time. But my friends, whilst they were doing what young kids should be doing at that age, I met a young lady day one that I fell in love with and held her hands and walked along the beach for 2 weeks instead of maximizing the opportunity. And I came back to the UK and had this IT offer. And I realized I'm not really into technology. I'm into what technology facilitates. So I said to my Royal Air Force father, okay, I don't really want to start that career. I'll take a year out, a gap year. And he was very Royal Air Force, very disciplined. My surprise, he supported me. So I went to Canada and I was selling sports socks and all sorts of junk, minus 10 wind chill factor, sort of autumn, Hamilton, Ontario. And then I came across an Asian Canadian. And I won't give my whole life or we'll be here the whole podcast. This Asian Canadian was selling software on floppy disks that configured printers. And I went business to business, door to door, all sorts of small shops, even a small hairdresser needs to print stuff. And they were buying it. They were saying, no, they were saying, can you come back in 3 weeks? They were saying, do you have any printer ink whilst you're here? Because nobody brings that. And I wrote all this stuff down in a little book. And I got back to, after 3 months of being the best salesman because of my English accent, to be honest. But also, I thought, right, let me see what I can make of this data. And this was before the invention of the term CRM. And I put it into buckets and I asked the question, certain types of businesses seem to react one way, others another way. Is there something that groups companies together? Yes, Alex, the tax classification code. So, can I have a list of all the companies in these four tax classification codes? Because they seem to be our best customers. Sure. There was a list of 40,000 given to me. I faxed them. This was before email. They were a long while ago. I mail sorted them and we had a success rate of 80% for an appointment and a sales rate of 60%. So to cut a long story short, I'd like to think I was the driving force in making this Asian Canadian guy's company worth $10 million Canadian turnover, of which $8 million was profit. But I was 21. I had a Camaro sports car, money in my pocket, a skyrise apartment above mountain in Hamilton, Ontario. I didn't know I needed equity or ownership or anything. And at the end of that year, he said, Alex, I don't need you anymore. I'm not extending your visa. You have to leave in 2 days or they're going to deport you. What? So there was nothing I could do about it. And it was a big life lesson. So how did I fall into this? When I got back home, my Royal Air Force dad, well, I hear you can't now go back to your IT career and you don't want to. Yes, Dad, that's true. I've booked you, whilst you're in my house, you will be working. I've booked you an interview as a customer service agent at a water utility company. And you start, the interview's tomorrow and they want you to start on Monday because clearly you'll get the job. Dad, my God. So after being this guy, Camaro sports car, Canada, living the playboy lifestyle, I was welcome to water. How may I help you, Lord? So that's how I fell into this. And then just moving on from that, I was an agent and a team leader, then a supervisor. And I played a big part in making that the best water utility company for customer service. And then I realized, okay, I like this thing of fixing customer issues, but then remembering what it's like to be the agent with the headset on, not being able to fix the customer issues. And those are the two things that I've never stopped thinking about. That's not my dog, that's yours, for anyone in the podcast.
It's my dog. It's my dog going nuts.
So, yeah. We love dogs. Dogs should rule the world. So the utility company, I was the leadership position, and I realized we sell water to customers. We can't upsell, we can't cross sell. They have to take our water, they're in a fixed geographical area. Our job was purely to make our customer service the best. And we were the top of the scale according to the regulator. So I then had the bug. And then I jumped off to a company owned by Michelin, the tire company, who had acquired a UK company called ATS Euromaster, who fitted tires, shock absorbers, and brakes. And they had 24-hour roadside recovery. It was B2C and B2B. And I'm not giving you my whole CV, don't worry. I will pray see you soon. But in that role, we had consumers and we had business customers. And a guy in a truck could be told he has a delivery window of between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. in Glasgow to deliver his goods or he'll be refused. He's broken down in Wolverhampton. He's got 6 hours to go and he's getting not answered by the phone call. And then when the agent answers, they have no details about the tire serial number, the stock. And we've got all these KPIs we've guaranteed with the company that owns that truck driver's vehicles that we'll do it in. And it's like, oh, my Lord. So I then realized it's more about fixing the contact center. It's end to end. And I did a pretty good job there and it won awards, blah, blah. And then after that, I went into companies like Barclays Bank, Big Blue Chips. I worked with some startups, a company called Seatwave, which is the equivalent of StubHub. I'm sure you've heard of in the US, similar companies. And then probably the biggest corporate break I had was 2011 to 14. I joined a FTSE 100 company with 60,000 employees. And the group CEO, he had a parcel delivery company as part of one of his subsidiaries. And they were known as the worst parcel delivery experience you can possibly imagine. Don't expect your parcel to come on time. If it does come on time, it'll be broken, damaged, and it's just hopeless in every way. You can't talk to them. You can't trust they'll deliver. And he created a role. I'm going to create this new role, executive director of customer care. I'm going to bring someone new in. And he recruited me and dropped me in like The Sims. Imagine dropping a Sim who's opposite to everyone else on the board.
Yeah.
They'd all worked in parcel delivery for 20 years. They were like, straight away, this guy, what's he? And the CEO said, this guy's role is to fix our customer experience. So explaining them to them what customer experience meant was such a challenge. But 2 years later, we delivered our parcels on time. We gave proactive tracking. We allowed customers to change the delivery. And we were written about as the best parcel delivery experience in the UK and Europe at the time. But the CEO then sold that company to private equity who screwed it all up. So that was really frustrating. Another FTSE 100 company that owns four airline brands. Then a global whiskey company. That was awesome. Macallan Whiskey, famous Grouse, Cutty Sark, Highland Park. And then the last 3 years, I did a bit of work with a very well-renowned consultancy called Alvarez & Marsal, and they plugged me into lots of, I realized, wow, this consultancy gig, do you know, they get a lot of grief, but they work so hard and so many hours. And then really the last year and a half, I've been working with this startup bank in the Middle East, and it's going to be app-based. It's like the Revolut, the Monzas, the N26 of Europe, and I'm sure you have equivalents in the US, but everything I post on LinkedIn about these banks, these retail companies, the customer service sucks. If I make one of those mistakes myself, I will delete my LinkedIn profile because our customer service experience is going to be awesome. And if it's not, people can message me and I will actually reply to every customer. That's what I always do. So
awesome.
So that's my potted history. Sorry.
Awesome.
Do I get the job?
You're hired. So is it going to be app only or just app driven?
We're starting with an app, but then I've had to do a lot of work. So we need a contact center. Clearly, we need a website because you can't do the complicated things like car finance, mortgages on an app. We need social media, clearly. But now we're starting to realize the benefit of partnership approach. I don't think we'll ever have a branch ourselves because never say never. But for example, we're starting to say, right, we're going to deliver you a physical card, not just an app card. Maybe you can pick it up in Starbucks or, you know, I'm sure we're going to get to an omni-channel world. But I have to consider all these things. So it's very exciting. And
cool.
We won't get it right, but we're launching our brand in this quarter and next year. Boom. And hopefully it'll be very
I'm excited for you and then for that launch. So when you think about customer service experience, there's a lot that can maybe go into that. Like, what do you see as the best practice, like in terms of functions that should align in there? Because it's got to be more than just the contact center, certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll give a sort of generic answer, but this current role is one of those companies that's is very agile and product led. I've worked in companies that have that for the entire company was run that way. But fortunately, I've managed to change a few things. I have a kind of hybrid model. So in this particular role, the contact center reports into me. But so does the CRM strategy. So I've been the one that's the CTO and CIO. We had a disagreement on what CRM meant and what the vision was. So I came up with a vision and I selected one of the big four platforms we've all heard of to do the CRM. But within that also is the digital interaction, the knowledge management, the digital assistant, which is a chatbot, but a clever one, the social media. So basically, I'm responsible for everything to do with customer service experience. And what a lot of people don't understand, they get that confused with customer service. Customer service is like what they think of as customer care. You know, something's happening or gone wrong, I need to reach out to you. Customer service experience is, okay, the exact steps. We're going to start with a website that reveals our brand. Customers can say they want to join our wait list. That's part of the customer service experience. So how are we going to deliver that? They want to know more questions about the brand. How are we going to deliver that? And then they join our wait list. And for example, they then phone us and say, hey, I joined your wait list or message us or whatever. What's happening? That's customer. And then they join the wait list. So does one of their friends. One of the friends gets invited to download the app. The other doesn't. What the hell, you know? So that's just the very start. And then they start onboarding. And clearly a financial service, the stages, that's customer service experience. And then they're in our app and they're using the debit card, everything. It's all customer service experience. So clearly we have the contact center. And one of the things I'm trying to do is not become one of these digital mobile banks where you're forced to interact digitally. At any stage, you can go through our app and phone us or even request a callback. So we're not binning the voice channel. We're not driving people down these awful... What hell was, yeah. So it's taken a lot of persuasion, but we're going to try it and I don't think we'll fail. So literally everything to do with the customer service experience reports into me. But being a product-led team, we have UX people. There's a chief product officer and there's UX, but we have squads. So I have squads who are in the app that report to me and we have our own UX people within that. So I have direct ownership of the contact center, the usual things and the customer service. But I have the influence and the stakeholder management of all the customer facing collateral. And because I chose a CRM platform, the CTI, CIO didn't really want me to choose. They literally said, off you go with it, Alex. It's great. I'm building all the case workflow, the knowledge management, everything. So yeah, it's but that's what every, you see the chief customer officer roles and these VPs of CX on boards. So few of them have that sort of remit. They're usually marketing guys who've been given the sexy title and they don't have, if they have the contact center, they have no understanding of it. So yeah, so that's what I'm trying to make sure we don't lose sight of.
Yeah, more and more you're seeing contact center, agile transformation, other functions that you wouldn't traditionally see in a core CX or customer experience function rolling into that chief experience officer now, which I think is the right direction to go. You even see a lot more strategy being played out in that team, which I think is really important. You and I have gone on LinkedIn and we agree on CX is not where it's been around for a long time, but it seems like there's a lot of failure within the space. You know, where from your perspective, and I think I'm going to agree with you on all of the things that you view here, but like, what are the two or three things that are really just fundamentally wrong where CX as a discipline broadly is going wrong?
Well, the first thing is, I think it's focused in entirely the wrong area. And I see lots of people, they say the first starting point for CX is, and no disrespect, is voice of customer, NPS, feedback, insight, analytics, all that stuff. Absolutely, that's one of the top three. But what is the biggest issue right now is a customer can't even have a conversation. And have a conversation means, so I think 9 times out of 10, customers will just be forced to give up and live with, okay, I'm not going to get an answer. I just have to accept that's the new custom experience reality. So what time is my parcel coming? It's supposed to be here today. You're not going to get an answer. That sucks. First of all, you should be able to get an answer yourself digitally, or digitally, or whatever channel we choose, even voice self-service. And to get the answer, you should be able to go to an app or a website and actually not have to get the answer, because they should have proactively told you. I mean, the classic example, if we think of Amazon, I have a success rate of less than 40% for when they tell me when I place the order, the item will come, to when it actually comes. But then somewhere along the order status, the revised delivery date changes, but only if I happen to look at the app and see that. And then it will say, sorry, there's been a carrier delay, or some really uncustomer-friendly language. And that will say, it's now going to be a week later than you expected. So that's awful. But then what is bad about customer experience and customer service? If I contact Amazon, well, you know what? I needed this tomorrow. It's for a wedding anniversary or a party or something, or a birthday gift. They will say, well, I'm sorry, sir. There's nothing we can do about it. We can't even cancel or refund it until you wait another 4 days until XYZ has happened. So Amazon, the company's most, the planet's most customer-centric company, according to their blurb, they get that wrong. So to answer your point, the probably one, two, or three all-in-one thing is what we should be focusing on is just let the customer tell you what their issue is, or give them a voice, and everything behind that would follow, absolutely everything. So let customers find out the answer to their need or their question. If you can't do it proactively, that's not the end of the world. So whatever it is, hey, it says it's in stock, but I try and, like I spoke before, I try and order it, it gives me a message. So is it in the store? Can I find out right now? And you won't be able to get an answer to that. So pretty much every question I have is torturous at the moment. I can't think. There are some examples where, I want to do this. I either A, don't have enough information, or B, I can't do it. So reverse engineer, make that the biggest thing. But you're not going to reverse engineer that until you know those are the customer's issues. So I can't do this or don't. So make it so, and what we're building in the current role is everything a customer does is underpinned by insight. So if a customer wants to know, hey, I'm trying to use my credit card in this restaurant, it won't go through, they would type the words in our digital assistant or our app, or even talk to an agent. We will analyze straight away. Wow, what happened with that? So let's make sure we give the customer the ability to ask the question easily. So they can, as I said, they can send a message, they can live chat, they can request a callback, they can call us, and in the future, so they can ask their question immediately. And with our automated processes, we will give an answer straight away. But if we don't have the answer, there'll be an alert to say, we gave a lame answer. We know the answer we gave to Bill about that, we gave a substantive answer. So we can have closed loops continuously every day. Why can't the customer help themselves? Why do we force them to contact us? And the last thing we're doing, which is probably the second part of it, is probably one and two. Make it easier to customers to tell you what their issue is, help themselves and talk to you, get the insight from that. But the second thing we're doing, and this is my slightly unique approach to the customer feedback is, and insight is, every time a customer has interacted with us or tried to help themselves, we're creating a case in our CRM. So they don't have to talk to us, there'll be a case created. And they'll get a notification to say, hey, thanks for talking to us or looking at this self-help in the app. They can then go to the app at any stage, see the every interaction they've had with us. They're going to see the CRM case themselves. And when they want to, not when we invite them to, they can give feedback on how happy they were with the experience, the effort, and the outcome. They can then click a button that says, do you want us to follow up on this feedback? So that is just it's two simple principles, actually. But I think people get so hung up on stick a chatbot here or stick voice of analytics. You've just got to start with those are the two core fundamentals. Let customers find an answer to their question easily. And if they can't find it, let them talk to you easily. But everything they ask of you, make sure you underpin that with insight, because you won't be able to answer all those questions. You've got to make sure where are the gaps. Yeah. And then when you've spoken to a customer, if you've given a great answer or a terrible answer, allow them to tell you easily. And then again, pin all that insight together. You'll continuously improve. And I don't hear thought like that. That's what I want to be hearing.
Yeah, there's not a lot of companies that are piecing together. Well, there are, I guess, generally globally. But when you think about everyone that's focused on CX, no one's looking at signals across their customer base through different touch points and bringing them together in a smart way to understand their customers better. Yeah, yeah. That's hard work, right? It's not easy to do, but nonetheless, not necessarily happening. How does that maybe change? You're now at a company that is more app driven, right? And companies are pushing a lot of technology right now. Certainly COVID saw digitalization just kind of ramp up. there's a lot of just technical debt out there because people just need to get a solution up there quickly, whether it was good or not. Dan be the customer a little bit, but we had to get a solution up, right? Now, you're now at an organization that is more app-driven. Obviously, you're going to have different digital platforms that you're going to be able to engage through as a customer. How does that maybe change for you guys because you're more tech-focused where I want to... So if you think about sort of the in-app experience, is it one button click? Because you and I were talking about a great example. I won't mention the name. It's a very, very large global company that just came out with a nice watch. We'll leave it there, a digital watch. It seems like traditionally their in-app experience has been okay, but they kind of made it really difficult for you and had you running around Bahrain and in another city 30 minutes away. So tell me a little bit about what companies are missing, maybe in that in-app or digital experience. Is it that piece that you just mentioned, the ability to quickly go talk to a live person without going through 40 different kind of press one for this and five for that and six for another choice, et cetera? Is it right to speak?
I think it's that's part of it. But so, yeah, I'm working for a digital app company now, but I've worked for a company that delivered 500,000 parcels a day. So it's a physical item. I've worked for a company that delivers the most amazing whiskey. And they'll have some people spending £500,000 on a bottle. And that end experience could be they're going to collect it in an airport lounge or they're going to have a guy turn up in a Range Rover with white gloves. So, yeah, that's this word omni-channel that people seem to have... The buzzword has disappeared, so they think the need has been solved. No, it's absolutely nowhere near been solved. So my view is an app, a website, any even a social channel or WeChat if you're in China is just the window to the experience. And too many companies, they have these chief digital guys building, or even marketing guys building the stuff that looks engagingly amazing. But there's a very simple thing you need to do. You need to join that window to the actual bricks and mortar, the physicality of the operation. So all the way back to the parcel delivery company, the way we improve things, we were delivering 500,000 parcels a day, and the contact centers, the customer service that I was officially accountable for from day one, had a 95% call abandonment rate, average speed of answer of over one hour. The only digital channel was emails, which is 6 weeks old. So when's my parcel coming? You'd get an answer in 6 weeks. It was hopeless. So that was the thing I was officially responsible for day one. But I managed to slowly eat across the span of control and created a mechanism where the 700 staff who worked across our depots and hubs and our physical operation centers that handled customer care, they became part of my reporting line. And we realized the phone calls, the questions, the emails, or even the request to change the delivery are just that's the stuff, the easy stuff to fix, make it easy for customers to ask those questions. What time is my parcel coming? And even now, you'll get the answer, it's due out for delivery today. You're just making that up, you know, or it's with our courier, be there in the next 2 to 3 days. So what we did is we started with a very simple process of, okay, what would a customer possibly need in a parcel delivery experience? And I'll explain that, but then we had to reverse engineer that into the retailer's experiences, clearly, because you don't order from a delivery company, you order from an Amazon, John Lewis, Marks and Spencer, et cetera, in the UK. So we start with, okay, how can we make it easy for customers to not have to phone us, sit in a queue when they either want to do one or two things? They fit into two buckets. I have a delivery coming that hasn't yet come. I want to change it. Or I have a delivery coming that hasn't yet come. I want to make sure it's still coming. It's a big one. Or the time has passed. What has happened to my delivery? So it's either I want to change something or find out something that parcels on the way, or you've already let me down. Everything fit into one of those two buckets. But then we had to work on the premise that, well, actually there's the people that send the parcels and the people that receive them. So we realized the people that send them are mostly SMEs, B2B. So we worked with their experience, first of all, because we knew we had to get it right with them to deliver to the B2C. So they had a portal where they could see the real time. Well, we wanted to give them something better than our competitors. So I came up with a vision to fix the problem with the customer contact, the people waiting for the parcels. We're getting 60 to 80,000 phone calls a day. What time is my parcel coming? And these were in the days where we gave no estimation of that. So Lord above, if we can just get ahead of that and give them, that will take out 50,000 calls at least.
Plus, and huge cost savings.
Exactly. Plus we'll be better than the competition. Imagine being able to sell that to the people sending parcels. We can say to them, hey, we can tell your customers, wow, that'd be cool. And then we realized, okay, that would be cool. But to do that, oh my Lord, because I went out with the drivers at 4 a.m. I got into their heads. I saw the way they did things. They would turn up at 5 a.m. Someone would have been there at 4 a.m. putting all the parcels behind the back of their van just based on postcode. So you do PE10 to PE12. That's your parcel. He'd stick them in the back of the van. You know, he'd look at them right on a piece of paper. In his head, he knew the area. He'd just do a route that he thought made sense. Along the way, there were car crashes. There was, you know, weather. Sometimes he would deliver, sometimes he wouldn't deliver. But the biggest fundamental thing, and I will come to the point, is that because I went out with this guy, he had a PDA and he had lots of paperwork. He'd run out, I'd go with him the first 20 drops, they called it, to see what was happening. And then I left him to go and I looked at his sheet and I realized he put on three of the first 20, tried to deliver, the customer wasn't in. Because I knew the area, I thought, you've not been to that address, Lord above. So I took a screenshot of it and went back to the depot and looked into it, and I realized one of them, there was not sufficient address details. The guy had no chance to even find. It was like an apartment block with no apartment number. There was no phone number. His only option was to say, try to deliver, you weren't in. But that would have triggered to the customer an alert. The customer's like, what the hell? Nobody came. And then I realized the other two, one was a guaranteed pre-9 a.m. delivery. And by the time he would have got there, it would have been 9:20. So he would have looked bad. But it's because the route, when he wrote it on a piece of paper, didn't factor that in. So I realized, okay, the drivers are failing and these things are happening, not because they're bad drivers, because the system is broken. So to get to the point, we had to do two things. We had to be smart about the way we delivered parcels. And I knew there were separate route optimization projects going on where they were going to come up with dynamic routing, etc. So I wanted to align that to my custom experience transformation. So we would have an idea for every parcel when the driver would roughly be there. So, okay, that sounds simple. But that meant, okay, we would need to join the ERP, the delivery system, you know, all the parcels, the cages, the vehicles, the vans, the drivers, the depots, to the CRM, to the front end. And ultimately, to answer your question about how you make an app, a digital experience, join to a physical one, is a customer could go to our app and a business customer, first of all, could go to our app and click on a real-time status of every parcel we were delivering for them. And because they had access to a GPS, we couldn't say we tried to deliver, because another thing I put in place was, okay, if a driver says he tries to deliver, he has to take a photograph of the front door of the property. So they hated me in this parcel delivery company, as you can imagine, all these things I was making them do. But that photograph also geotagged their GPS position. So the drivers have thought, oh, let's find any door that says number 10, snap. That would. So it took 2 years for us to fix the under the iceberg before we could show to our actual end customers, hey, you can now track your delivery, because there was so much cultural change. But you can't be, there's no point having a beautiful superficial digital, as we spoke about earlier, digital experience, if it's not joined to the contact experience, the digital, the CRM, the physicality of what's going on. And that's just delivering parcels. When you're going to collect something in a store, even the store collection experience is sometimes awful, and they have no idea why you're there and you're sat there waiting for half an hour. It really is. And I wish Amazon would have a go at their own stores, because I suspect they would have a really awesome physical collect your parcel, your order experience too. So yeah, it's, but I mean, the overarching thing is the silos of thinking. Typically, there's not someone who says, right, here's our customer vision for our customers and for our business customers. Here's where we need to get to. And the hardest part was getting people to sign up to where we need to get to, because we were the first company to do that. Okay, everyone sign up to that. No, hate it. So the CEO had to work with me. Okay, I signed up to it, so you guys are going to sign up to it. They hated me with a passion for a long while. And then when the shoot started to come up and they were winning sales and awards, thanks, Alex. They didn't say thanks. But yeah, it's not, as you said, it is not easy at all.
You know, that's the thing when I hate the word channels, right? Like, no one calls their mobile phone a channel, right? Yeah. Companies call that stuff channels, right? Yeah. And now, and I think that this has certainly been exacerbated due to the pandemic, right? With the proliferation of digital opportunities to engage with the business. Do you think it's the silos in an organization that causes or that creates that challenge where, you know, your in-app or web or is not connected maybe to the in-store, to the more sort of brick and mortar physical experience? Or is there something else going on there?
I think it's that and also something else. So first of all, yeah, if you think of the typical organization, the sophisticated ones that think that they have the right structure, there are lots of chief roles that have a chief digital officer, probably a chief customer officer, maybe, and the chief customer officer will really be a marketing officer. So in fact, let's take it down. Forget the word chief. You'll have a digital person You'll have a marketing person, you'll have a commercial person, you'll have a salesperson, some poor unlucky contact center customer service person, probably HR operations, IT fulfillment, the usual bit. So there won't be someone in there who has the mandate or the span of control to say, I'm the customer service experience. I love that word. That's what it should be. Who basically, I own the vision and the strategy across digital, across every customer. I hate the word channel as well. Across every customer journey. That's what I call it. So ordering a product, the example we gave. So you go to an app, you go to a website, it's in stock, you try to order it. Okay, you need to go to our store to collect it because for some reason you can't, there's only one left. Okay, I should be able to reserve that at the store immediately. Ah, but you can't because there's not a sync up between the website and the store. Someone fix that. Okay, why is there not a real-time sync up? Well, the worst we can make is 5 minutes. Okay, just message that. And then allow the mechanism in whatever platforms for the customer to press a button and say, hey, I reserve that. But everything goes to every door you open, it opens another door. Ah, but are they going to have to pay in full to reserve it or deposit? Because what if a customer physically walks into the store and they want to buy? You have to think of all these things. Then the customer gets to the store and they pick it up and, oh, actually, I didn't know it looked like that. I've changed my mind. You know, all these blockers are never thought through. Okay, and I've got it. I've taken it home. Oh, I want to return it. Well, actually, if you'd order it for distance selling and we deliver it to your house, that's fine. Because you physically picked up in a store, there's no refunds or returns. And everything has these dumb silos. And to actually have someone who thinks as a customer. And so whether it be channels, every company needs someone who just thinks like an average customer. And the digital guys think about digital platform. The sales guys think about sales numbers. And the marketing guys think about above and below the line. So just have someone on a board who's accountable for thinking like a customer, and they've got to be supported by the CEO. And 75% of the ideas I come up with are harebrained. Don't be stupid, Alex. It's amazing, but wow, forget it. We're not going to allow that. And that's fine, but it needs to be the voice that continually pushes. And of those 25% that everyone has to agree with because they're bad situations that cost revenue, retention, loyalty, then you have to then leverage, okay, digital guy, you need to work with me. And a real example is, in my current role, we've got these amazing digital designs, but a lot of it is hard-coded. And I said, well, knowledge management, they need to be dynamic. They need to be pulled out of our CRM. So you should have run that by me before you spent 3 weeks building these amazing digital designs. But again, because when I joined, didn't have the span of control on that. So yeah, it's channels, but it really is. I think it's, I hate the word channel. Two things I'd love to remove from customer experience is the phrase channels and the phrase customer experience. Because if you think about what does customer, it's like, what do you do? I do business stuff. That's what customer experience sounds like to me. So is it the customer experience of the service interactions or the marketing interactions or the fulfillment interaction? So it's the experience of something. Yeah, but everything is CX, Alex. Okay, so you show me one of these CX experts who's an expert in fulfillment, sales, marketing, customer service, contact centers. They're not. They all have their niches. So that's why I say I'm a customer service experience expert, because I'd suck at doing your marketing, but I'm pretty good at the other stuff.
Very cool. I'm glad that you're on the front end leading the charge, helping people think differently and challenging those who are not helping us as a discipline grow and succeed. Alex, fun conversation. Glad to have you on the show. I really appreciate you being on with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
All right, everybody. Another great show. See you next week.
We're out. Talk to you soon,
Thanks
everyone.
For listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.